In this second hour of Midday, we catch up on the world of television and the news media with Baltimore Sun critic David Zurawiec. How the media has presented Baltimore to the nation and the world during and since April's riot is one of our topics. We'll also get David's take on the E! Channel documentary series about the life of Caitlyn Jenner after the transition from Bruce Jenner. Donald Trump makes news every day and says a lot of outrageous things. We'll get David's thoughts on Trump's truce with Fox after his comments about anchor Megyn Kelly. And Stephen Colbert prepares for his debut as David Letterman's Late Show replacement, praying every night that Trump stays in the presidential race until at least September 8th. Midday on Media with David Zurawiec after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday. Midday on Media now, our monthly visit with David Zurawiec, a media critic of the Baltimore Sun who blogs at Z on TV. David, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. I love that song, Dan.
Yeah.
It puts me, man, that's a good song.
We told you what that's from, didn't
we?
Yeah. You remember the movie it's from?
Yeah. It's with John Travolta.
John Travolta. Yeah, he plays Chili.
Yeah.
Chili Palma.
Oh, no, here we go, guys.
Chili outside, chili inside.
Guys.
It's a regular chili fest. Yeah.
Yeah. There goes 10 minutes
good movie.
Of the show. No, I'm kidding.
We got a lot to talk about. We're probably going to end up talking about Donald Trump today, sometime during this hour. Stephen Colbert getting ready to take over for David Letterman The Late Show in early September.
We
want to talk about David Simon's new project.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this documentary series, I Am Kate.
Yeah.
About Caitlyn Jenner.
Yep.
Is it Caitlyn?
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah.
But I wanted to start the show with this news about Jared Fogle, the ex-Subway pitchman, who all of us got to know, I forget how many years ago now it's been. It's been since...
I think they said 15 years.
15 years,
been,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. He was a college kid, lost 200 pounds by eating just his meals at Subway.
So he
said. So
yeah.
he said, and, you know, in big trouble now, pleading guilty to sex acts with minors, child porn. And I guess I wondered about, this is an aspect of the media we don't talk about that much, is advertising, that part of it. I mean, he's an iconic figure, forever identified with this product, Subway Subs. Subway is now the world's largest restaurant chain.
Wow.
It grew like crazy during the time that he was their pitch man. They severed ties with him. I looked to see when they severed ties with him, and it was only last summer when news about this investigation started trickling out. But up until 2013, that was the 15... Actually, it says here that was the 15-year anniversary, 2015. They had a big Super Bowl ad marking that occasion of Jared's famous diet. So I don't know what to say about this, except it's another sad, pathetic story of a person who is in the public eye for a long time and has these serious charges against him. But also, I just wondered, how does this play in the public's mind in terms of advertising the product, your identification with the product, of the man with the product? Does that affect how you feel about Subway in any way?
Yeah, you know, I think actually, you know, you were talking about Trump and politics, and I think this story of Jared is a good reminder in this political season, because one of the things most interesting to me is about the way, you know, for all our new media and for all our digital media, and as much as we are all very much in that world already, television is still where this campaign's being run. And that's all Trump does. Trump has no digital campaign compared mm-hmm. to Obama. He's in, you know, he's 1,000 years behind. But we still think we know people who we see on TV. We think we know them. I mean, people, you know, say these things. They've seen Donald Trump on TV. They think they know something about him. Finally, it's the print press is starting to take him apart, cut a piece of his legs off each day with a story, thank God. But people think they know him. And I think that's the same thing that happened
people
here.
People thought they knew Bill Cosby.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same. Dan, I think that's a great thing. I think it's exactly the same thing in some ways as Bill Cosby. And it's interesting because, you know, in a way, even older people assume younger people are more sophisticated about the media in some ways because they're more comfortable mainly with new media. But I don't think that's the case with television. And I think marketing like with Jared, which was really marketed to millennials, I mean, especially millennial males. I mean, you know, college kids walking around with these plastic bags, you know, and I always see guys walking around, you know, and I'm, what's in there, you know? Are they got a dog too that they got to have a poop bag for their dog like I do when I walk my neighborhood? No, it's a Subway sandwich. Mm-hmm. That's the way they get them.
Yeah.
And they're happy to, it's kind of a badge, you know, I know how to do it. Also, Subways are relatively inexpensive for college kids, and that's the way you eat when you're in college.
Actually, for everybody.
So he
his appeal was that you can lose weight. It's possible. I did it. I'm an average guy. Look at me.
Well, and that's the amazing thing, you know, because it's like, you know, you pile on the dressing and you pile on this and you get a big loaf of bread. Yeah. And you're going, God, I can lose weight eating all of that. What am I eating this seaweed for? You know, that's a diet I want to go on.
You know, it was analyzed. People did run it down and said, you know, if you do what he did, you can come close.
But I think people, I think there was more to it. There was more about him as looking like kind of a little nerdy, a little nebbishy, you know, and transforming himself. That's the secret of advertising, is transformation. Remember, they sold tennis shoes that way. You could be like Mike. You could jump as high as Michael Jordan if you bought this tennis shoe.
Right.
That kind of transformation, and ads are that way. You got a guy who's a schlub, you know, and he's bald and he's 50-ish, you know, and then he buys a car and, like, women are hanging on him and going, he's cool. That's right. How you transform yourself, by making this purchase. I mean, that's one of the great sins and lies of the advanced capitalist culture we live in is, you know, and people do it. People go to the mall. Kids, but we start them young. Kids' television teaches them that. And then they, by the time, you know, they go to the mall and they think they're going to buy something and they're going to be transformed and they're going to find happiness at the mall and community and all this stuff that you never find really by making purchases. It's like being a drug addict. You just get further and further disconnected from yourself. So in a way, they use a guy like Jared to sell this promise. I don't know if it's a false promise. Promise of transformation by eating our sandwich. And he really is, in a way, you know, he's not some, you know, especially in interface with the super athletes Subway uses, who are these built up really
Mike
great.
Mike Trout now.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great one. Yeah, Mike Trout. You know, who's a phenomenal athlete. You know, he's like the ultimate baseball hitter. I mean, you know, he's a... So here's a normal person who can do it, and you kind of think, oh, he's, you know... And then he turns out to be this. So
how does it rub off, if it does at all, on the product and what...
Yeah.
You know, is it going to stop people from going to Subway?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I thought it was an interesting question.
It is interesting because you built an identification with the product,
through the
guy.
Yeah.
Then you find out it was a lie. Do you quit the product?
Or did he have some other problem?
Yeah. Well, he's not the guy they sold you as. You know what I'm saying? Do you quit the product? I think we don't. I think we're so hooked on the product that we then stay with the product and go, oh, that's a sick thing. I don't want to think about this guy, you know, and you don't think about him. And, you know, they'll find another. This is what Madison Avenue's good at.
Find another. It will be interesting to watch what becomes of Subway ads in the coming year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll hurt it, but also don't forget, you're selling a product, too. And if the product's decent, once you get them in the tent, they're going to keep taking the product. So if a kid goes, I got $5, I can buy this, I can eat. You know, all of us, I mean, I think all of us who went to college love it and were romantic and nostalgic about it. But it really was, you had like...
I've never been romantic or nostalgic about a Subway sub.
No, I was just going to say...
I can't think of one moment when I felt that way.
At the University of
Wisconsin... But I like the sub. What sub do you like there?
I don't eat subs there.
You don't?
No.
Never go to Subway?
I do not go to Subway. Because I think it's a lie that you can, you know, I'm not trying to knock down any underwriting from Subway.
You don't think it's a healthier choice than where you usually go? Where do you go when you're on the road?
You eat a loaf of bread, I don't think you're going to lose weight. I'm sorry. I don't care how what they tell me. You know, and then you get the melty cheese.
No,
you
I don't get the melty cheese. Yeah, the melty cheese. I always get the vegetarian, the foot-long vegetarian.
But I'm like, how are you going to lose weight eating that? I'm going to be full.
With lots of hots.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to my desk and fall asleep. You know, I mean, I don't think
and
that's
and baked Lays. Always get the baked Lays with it.
No, you know what? I go and get a double espresso shot in my coffee at Starbucks.
I'm surprised you don't mainline it. Anyway.
That's it.
All right. You want to move on?
I'm happy
If anybody wants to talk about Jared, the phone lines are open. It's Midday on Media. Dan Rodericks with David Zerowick, 410-662-8780.
Yeah, and honestly, Dan, I think it is a reminder, though, that the person we think we know on TV, I mean, that's obvious. People know that, I think, but we forget it. You know, all of us.
I received a couple of emails from listeners who wanted to hear what you had to say about the E! Channel we call it a documentary serial documentary.
Yeah,
documentary
series. Yeah,
documentary on Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, you know, I've watched it, and I was initially I was pleased that by the standards of E television, the E channel, okay. And the standards of, you know, they can call it a docuseries.
It's really reality TV.
And it makes me mad because you know, and you interview them, you bring them on this show, what a real documentary maker goes through.
Okay.
They have no money, blah, blah,
Is
blah.
Is it just
okay,
reality
I'm
TV?
I'm
going
to stop. It's reality TV. But it's the high end of it. And I have to say that they aspired to a sense of social responsibility that I have not seen on that channel in anything else that they've done, and it's certainly not on a channel like TLC, which does these kinds of shows. And that encouraged me, and they seemed to have an empathy for or a concern or a desire to speak in a, I hate to use the word authentic with television, but let's say authentic in quotes for now, authentic way with families and especially young people who are transitioning, you know, are on that journey, and they're very sensitive to how fraught with peril that can be in this culture because of people who are not supportive of it. That encouraged me. I liked it. I'll tell you what I don't like so much about it, and part of this was the marketing. You know, I hate Vanity Fair and GQ and all that, and all the emphasis on cosmetics. You know, and if you look at the ads for I am the Caitlyn Jenner docuseries, it's chock-a-block with ads. I mean, they had more ads, I think, than Super Bowl, the premiere episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were clipping the show; they were running the ads over to try and get more of them in there, and a lot of them are for beauty products or, you know, skincare products, cosmetics, blah, blah, blah. Now, the industry's always did, you know, they did it in quiz shows in the 50s. It was the Revlon hour and all of that. But I think they're emphasizing, and because it's commercially a good strategy, it's a good business strategy, they are emphasizing the cosmetic aspects of her journey.
Of the transition?
Yeah, and about, you know, the right kind of fingernail polish and the right kind of lipstick and all of that. And the way it synergizes with the ads, I think, can create in people's minds the notion of appearance and not getting into the deeper issues connected with it. What do I want to say? You're treating it in a cosmetic fashion instead of the more serious, complicated fashion it should be dealt with. But I'm not saying that they're totally not doing that because they are. But I'm surprised that they're making as much of an effort as they are in as commercial an environment as they're in.
Who do you see in the series? Do you see Caitlyn?
Yeah, and you
Caitlyn Jenner's family.
Yeah, you see
children, or
you see family. You see Kardashians. You know, so almost everybody who is in Caitlyn Jenner's life makes a pass through there. And the first episode, her mother came, and they spent the first one. Mm-hmm. They spent in the pilot episode. They spent a lot of time with the mother talking about that she was having a hard time accepting. As much as she loved Caitlyn Jenner, she was pretty honest about it. I thought they could have done even more, but at least they approached it.
According to ABC News, Kris Jenner, who is married to Bruce Jenner, the mother of the children, has a confrontation with Caitlyn Jenner, at least in a promo for an upcoming episode of I Am Kate, which may mean that that's what you'll see in the next episode. I'd be interested if anyone in our audience has seen this and what you make of it.
Yeah.
If you have,
yeah.
If you share David's view of what you're getting there on the E! Channel with I Am Kate. 410-662-8780. Before we go to our first break, David, let's take a couple of calls on the subject of Jared Fogle, which we started the show with, the longtime Subway pitchman who agreed to plead guilty to allegations that he paid for sex acts with minors and received child pornography that he knew had been secretly produced by the former director of his charitable foundation. This is all according to federal prosecutors in the news reports today. Jessica in Hunt Valley, thanks for calling Midday.
Hi.
Hi, Jessica. What did you want to say?
I just thought it was funny that he just came out and admitted three things. Usually if people are guilty, they would try, you know, put it off and deny it. So I'm thinking there might be something deeper to the story than just what he's admitting.
I don't know what to say about that, except it isn't true. Actually, in most cases, people do not go to trial and have a jury and all that. Most cases, I wouldn't dare put a percentage on it, but a high number of criminal cases never get to trial. People reach plea agreements. They're presented with the evidence. They're told what they have against them, especially in federal court, where the penalties can be really harsh.
Yeah.
And they can send you away, far away from where you live, to a federal prison in, you know, 1,000 miles away. So I'm not totally surprised that we would hear about this case after it's already been concluded, when there's already been an agreement made.
Yeah, and I expect that he had lawyers who could talk to the federal lawyers and so he knew what his options were. And, you know, it seemed as if the way the federal government was proceeding on this, that they had a pretty good case. Also, as we talk about this, one of the things is, and I'm trying to, you know, remain sort of dispassionate and neutral, but crimes that involve power imbalances really upset me. I mean, honestly, and I don't care if it's the president with an intern or what it is. Those crimes, to me, are the worst. So this, to me, is a really, this is a really bad stuff as far as I'm concerned.
We'll take a short break here, come back and talk some more with David Zerwick. We got a lot more to talk about. We'll get to Donald Trump, Stephen Colbert, the new HBO program that David Simon has produced. We'll talk about that. And then, David, a little bit about how the news media has covered Baltimore since
the death
of Freddie Gray and the riot of April 27th. We'll get back to you in just a moment. 410-662-8780. Hey, welcome back, everybody. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to join our conversation with David Zerwick, media critic of the Baltimore Sun. Chico had something to say about advertising on television. Calling from Glen Burnie. Chico, go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good.
I'm David.
Hi, Chico.
Okay, listen. I'm 50, over 50, and I remember Harlan Sanders, you know, the Colonel.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, from KFC,
And it seems like KFC either had planned to do this switch because they just did a switch where, oh, that's not the real Colonel.
Well, the new guy's kind of creepy, isn't he?
Isn't he?
I don't like that.
I swear it's one of the bridges. It looks like one of the bridges.
Oh, really?
I don't know who it is. But I can see why he would say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was out on Twitter last week.
Really?
And I had to look at it, so I went and looked at it. Yeah, this guy's...
I don't know anything from that guy. Like, and I thought they were trying...
You lick your own fingers.
Listen, I thought, was this like some postmodern mockumentary of the whole thing, you know, that I'm not getting?
Because
maybe it is. Maybe it's like the kernel for the digital age. It mocks the kernel of the other age.
You know, it made me want to be in the room with the advertising, the madmen of 2015 and women who figure out who to use now as the kernel, how they pick him up. Right?
That's a great topic, Chico. Thanks,
Thank
man.
You very much.
I know, and I never registered. I was like, well, you know, why should I get upset who the colonel is? But in the back of my mind, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Was there ever been an advertising figure, character, that made you want to buy the product?
Oh, wow. Huh.
I don't know. Who would that be?
I think the
pitchman or pitchwoman.
I think in the 80s they had Alf selling wristwatches, and I wanted to get an Alf.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking.
Alf was funny.
I'm joking.
Did you used to write reviews of Alf?
I had an Alf wristwatch.
Didn't you like Alf?
Yeah, I did. I had an Alf suit, actually.
Were you?
I had an Alf suit.
Were you an Alf fan?
You know, it wasn't Zurich Postmodern mocking the... I used to say that Alf was like the ultimate sitcom. And people would say, oh, Zurich, it's a stupid show. You're a moron. It proves you know nothing. I go, no. You know, Mork is just like Lucy in I Love Lucy. He really can't. He wants to go out in the world and do things, but he can't go out in the world and do things. So, and they go, oh, that's kind of interesting. I go, and you know, he's like Chauncey Gardner in being there. Everything he knows about our culture, he's learned from TV. And they go, oh, and then they go like, come on, you're putting me on. Well, no, I believe this. This is truth. Even the dumbest sitcom has some profound stuff. Otherwise, why would it be so successful? But, you know, when Alf connected on shortwave with Rhonda's love, and it was existential. He was separating. She was out in the universe.
Was.
Thank you.
I
you watched,
Alf.
Too. Yeah.
Yep. I had an Alf doll. Alf stuffed Alf.
People, you know what? The other critics.
What happened to that?
The other critics. I stole it. The other critics used to send me all the Alf swag that NBC would send them.
I think that's where I got the stuffed Alf from, maybe. Brooke in Baltimore wanted to talk on a serious note about I Am Kate, the series about Caitlyn Jenner. Hello, Brooke.
Hi, Dan.
So have you been watching?
I have been watching.
Give us your impressions.
Yeah, so I've actually been surprised that it's on E! As a network because for years I've watched The Kardashians just for the pure entertainment value. But, you know, they always have a very hard skew that they're trying to show The Kardashians like they're relatable people and they're actually not as bad as a lot of the media portrays them. But through watching I Am Kate, it's becoming really clear to me that, no, they kind of are that superficial because
they are.
all they comment about to Caitlyn, both in their interviews and to her face, is, oh, but you look so good. This is your moment because you are looking amazing. Like, they're not talking about any of the actual issues or how it's affecting them or her as a family. So I've just found it very interesting that E!, which is so skewed towards loving the Kardashians, is airing this because it portrays them in a pretty negative light, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. You know, Brooke, thank you so much.
Because
that's what I was trying to say earlier, and I think you said it better, actually. Thank you. That's exactly it.
It seems so superficial.
That was one of the things that troubled me. It's not it's superficial, but it's like cosmetic superficial. Mm. The important thing is to look good, you know, and if you look good, you should be happy. You know, that's what you need. And I think that's a devastating message. And I think it's a devastating message to a lot of young people, and especially teens and adolescents. I think that's a really dangerous message that you have to look good in a certain way, in a certain sort of mainstream media way to be happy. I think that's one of the most devastating messages of television, and it's always been there with the medium because it's the way they sell things.
Lorenzo's calling about a movie that he wanted to share some thoughts with us about, Straight Outta Compton, which opened, I think, this past weekend. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good. So did you get to see it?
Yes, I did. But first of all, I got to tell you, you guys are hitting on some really weird stuff today. First of all, KFC, I don't know what's going on with that thing. I will never eat there again. Secondly, man, what are you talking about? You're trying to connect Mork with Chance from Chauncey Gardner? Kaczynski's my favorite. Don't do that. Please don't do that.
It's all praise for Kaczynski. Yeah. I love it.
Oh, my goodness. You heard my feelings. Say,
Midday on Media with David Zerwick is a transcendental experience.
Oh, man. You made my day. Listen, you made my day.
Anyway,
you got it in the spirit I meant it. Thank you.
Well, you know, Kaczynski when I was 14 years old. So, I mean, I feel that one. I feel that
okay.
one.
That's
so.
Funny. Yeah, that's thank funny. You, man.
I saw the movie Straight Outta Compton, and the reason I called is I wanted to preempt your conversation about, you know, about what folks are saying about what happened in Baltimore. But, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up on NWA. I was 29, 30 years old when they came out and as an African-American, man, I heard that message. But I got to tell you, if you want to know how these kids feel in Baltimore City right now, all you need to do is go watch that movie. That movie is affecting black people, my age group, all kinds of it, right now on Facebook, it is going crazy. People are talking about it and how it made them feel. That movie, it's weird because all the stuff that's happening in that movie is happening today. That's what's going, you know, how young black folks are being mistreated, how they are being treated because of where they live and the color of their skin. This is how these guys in the NWA felt. You know, if you can get through the cursing and everything, which, believe me, if you grew up in the hood, cursing means nothing. If you get through all that and maybe get through some of the misogyny and look at the real message, you will definitely get a peer into what goes on in the hearts and minds of young black folks. So you really must see the movie. And just a quick story, I mean, when they first came out with their, you know, all their lyrics and all the things they said, at the time, I was climbing in the world. I had just got my first promotion to sales manager of a dealership in Livonia, Michigan. And that was back around 1979, which at the time, believe it or not, happened to be the most racially segregated area in the United States, Michigan, not now South Michigan. And I got a promotion as sales manager and a dealership, and I drove a brand new car every day. That's what you do when you're a sales manager. You get a brand new car. And I wore Armani suits, but like two or three times a month, I drive to work and the police would pull me over wanting to know why I'm driving this car and where I'm going. There were even times I would go to open up the building, you know, in off hours, you know, and the cops would, if they saw me opening up, they would make a U-turn, come back and want to check out why am I going in this building. And I was clean cut, suited up, and they still treated me that way. But and watching this movie just brought back a lot of feeling. But it is a definitely a view into how young black folk feel even today. So I would suggest that if you really want to know about it, take a look at it, okay?
Lorenzo, I appreciate
Lorenzo,
that.
Lorenzo, that's a great call. Lorenzo, thank you so much.
You.
I got to tell you, in 1979, I was in Detroit at the Detroit Free Press, and I can testify to what you say about it being very segregated. There was an area called Birmingham, Michigan. It was just up Woodward Avenue. It was sued by the Justice Department because it was so white. And so I know that world well, and I'm so glad because when I saw that, I thought I have not seen Straight Outta Compton, but because I watch TV, I don't do feature films, but cable TV news has been going nuts with the box office of it and trying to get at the import of it. So I'm so glad you did it. And I'll tell you what, Lorenzo, we're going to talk about it in a little bit. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm doing a piece for this Sunday in the Sun about all the different people from CNN to the Brookings Institute to coming to Baltimore to interview West Baltimore teenagers in the wake of Freddie Gray. And I'm trying to get at, what's good about it, what are they asking? And one of the things I'm finding that's really interesting from the teenagers themselves is they're saying, nobody asked us how we feel about this, and it's cathartic. That's their words, and it's liberating to be able to talk about it. And it's a fascinating thing. So when you say to find out what people think about it, we're getting another strain of that in the media. We're getting some stuff that's not so good too, that people imposing their stereotypes on West Baltimore. But
or people, I call them the parachutists.
Yes,
you know, the journalists who parachute in for a couple of days and discover this phenomenon of Baltimore and report back and with a very dystopian picture of the city, as if they had never been aware of any of these urban problems before in any city, not just Baltimore.
And you're being nice. You're saying those are the naive ones. I think some of them are dishonest hot dogs who want to come off as kind of cool and, you know, and hard-charging street types, and they went nowhere. Yeah. They've been nowhere. Yes.
Right. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. I mean, I do have that impression, especially some of the national press.
You were being kind. Totally.
So I wanted to turn to this story and draw our listeners' attention to a piece David wrote the other day about CNN anchor. He's a sort of anchor reporter, Tyler Blackwell.
Victor Blackwell.
So he came and he talked to kids.
Yeah.
And CNN, CNN does what CNN does. They don't often do this. He got in a little bit deeper.
Oh, this is fascinating. I actually talked to Blackwell yesterday on the phone because I posted about this video he did with West Baltimore teens. But now we're doing a Sunday story that broadens it and talks to a bunch of people who are doing these kinds of stories. But he's really at the heart of this. And I talked to him and I talked to one of the teens. This is a great story because Blackwell was actually in Haiti on the Monday when the rioting broke out. He was on assignment in Haiti. So he said, I'm sitting in a Marriott hotel bar in Port-au-Prince at the end of the day, and I'm watching a riot. And he said, I'm sitting there with Haitians who are going, tisk, tisk, tisk. What's wrong with that city? and he says, I'm watching the looting at Mondawmin Mall. I'm going, Mondawmin Mall, that's where I bought my shoes for my senior prom. I know these people. I know this world. So anyway, he got back here on, I think, 3 days later on that Thursday, and he went out to West Baltimore, and he interviewed three teenagers. And the interviews, he really got at, Dan, the sense of two of them were graduating, and they felt they were never going to get out of Baltimore. They just graduated from, going to graduate from high school, no hope. And he said to them, do you want to leave West Baltimore? And one guy, Kyrique Jones, who I talked to last night as well, said, I dream of leaving West Baltimore, but that doesn't mean I have any hope of that ever happening. And then he says, well, you know, are you serious? You don't have any hope? And one of the other teens, Jamel Phillips says, I think it's Jamel Phillips, says, you can have all the hope you want. That's not going to change anything in our lives. And I thought, my God, if you feel this, that was such a heartrending statement of what they feel. This is people 17 years old graduating from high school. And I thought, if you can deaden people's sense of hope, their souls that way, this system is so problematic. And it was the first time I think I understood that sense. I've since been into the neighborhood with Sonia Sohn from The Wire, sat in on a workshop where she was helping teens find their voices. And it's fascinating to hear the voices of West Baltimore talk about what they feel. And they really do feel that the larger culture isn't interested in them. That one of these young men says, look, I can be shot, and then I'll be on the news one night, and then a day later it'll be forgotten. You know, my mom will be on the news, and that was actually not one of these three. It was from another story that another reporter at The Sun was telling me about. But, you know, we've really got a problem. And the interesting thing to me is media is accused of often just coming for the violence, packing up and going away. And
the president of the United States even alluded to the television media using over and over again sort of a continuous real loop of a fire in Baltimore.
Yeah. Now, yeah. You brought that up because a lot of listeners.
Well, he was complaining about the media saying,
I'm joking.
The riot was contained one day and.
I'm joking because you know how. Yeah. During the riots,
there was numerous fires,
and there were 144 car fires, according to the city. And how angry I got that the president of the United States wouldn't come 45 miles to Baltimore.
Remember, we talked about it here.
Yeah, you know. So
anyway,
so,
can we say we have to take a break? Okay. I just wanted to mention to folks that the president of Bethune-Cookman University, which is in Florida,
yes.
Edison Jackson saw this interview, and he invited the kids, these young men.
Yeah,
he saw this
is fantastic. He saw the interview on CNN with Victor Blackwell and the three teens. He invited them down to Bethune-Cookman. They didn't know what it was for. Two of them had never been out of the city, never been on a plane. He pays for their airfare, brings them down, takes them on a tour of campus. They still don't know, according to them. At the end of it, he brings them in after he's interviewed them and sort of assessed them, and he says, look, I'm going to give you admission to Bethune-Cookman, and any money that federal grants and that won't cover, we will pay for. So you essentially, I'm going to guarantee you an education.
And what do you think is going to happen?
I talked to them. They have mentors. They're going to be getting really help along the way to get up to speed of Bethune, of kids who maybe had a better education than they got in Baltimore City School. I'm not going to pull a punch.
No, no.
These kids, Baltimore City School, they themselves, one of the kids says, this is unbelievable, Dan, because one of the kids in there says, Freddie Gray, certified as a carpenter from Carver Vocational Tech. He's certified in a trade from Carver Vocational Tech. He says, that's what I'm looking at. No exposure, no experience. And when I talked to him yesterday, I said, what was the reaction to that? He said, well, a couple of the administrators were mad that I said that on CNN.
Well, I don't understand. What is the point he's making?
He's
certified as a carpenter through a vocational high school.
And there's no jobs for him.
That
Freddie Gray had no job except the job of...
I thought that's what you meant.
And that's part of the hopelessness.
Yeah.
Dan, how do you go to school every day when the models ahead of you who did the same thing you're doing didn't get jobs, nobody helped them? Right. Now, it's not just the school's fault. It's a larger society. What about all these companies in this city who do millions and billions of dollars downtown construction? They can't hire these kids when they come out with a trade. I'm off the media now. Right. I'm going to shut up now.
All right, it's a good time. We're taking a break here. We'll come back and talk some more. 410-662-8780. But Don, Gene, and Dan, stand on the line. We'll get to you in a minute. Actually, a minute and 30 seconds. We'll be right back. Take a couple of calls for David Zerwick. Actually, Gene in Ellicott City calling in to clarify something about the new KFC commercials. Gene, go right ahead.
Hi. Well, just to show that Google knows all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I Googled it, and it turns out that there's been two KFC Colonel Sanders this summer.
Right.
Daryl Hammond was the first one starting back in May.
Right.
And they've replaced him recently with Norm MacDonald.
Yeah. Okay,
so
thank you.
I didn't realize it at the time, but when the Norm MacDonald one came on, I said, that's not quite the same. But,
no. No, thank you very much, Gene. Thanks for holding to tell us that. That's not the one that I saw on Twitter the other day. I don't think it was either one. It might have been Daryl Hammond. I think
Lorenzo had Daryl and Norm in there, too. Yeah, I think he had that in his message to us.
What's going on with that? Dan in Baltimore, go right ahead with your comment. Hi.
Great comments this afternoon, gentlemen.
Thanks.
I'm calling about the money guys and the Attorney General's new investigation. And just what's the media angle on this? The WBAL is taking all this advertising for these infomercials, and their management, which is pretty highfalutin and seems to carry themselves with high standards, doesn't say a damn thing.
It's an interesting.
And their investigative reporters don't do a damn thing.
Mm. It's an interesting question because the Attorney General has gone after this company. They actually want to put the company out of business. The company's countersued. We were just talking about it with Brian Frosch, the Attorney General.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they still, according to Dan, I guess they're still advertising. Everest Wealth Management is still out there somewhere. They have not stopped their operations.
No, and you mentioned WBAL, but, when I listen to the Orioles game, isn't the broadcast booth now called the Everest Wealth Management Broadcast Booth?
I believe so.
At the Orioles game on 105.7 The Fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're really... made their presence felt within the media. And here's what I guess. I mean, this is probably, Dan, I know we reported the issue with Frosch and Everett Walls Management out of our Annapolis Bureau, out of our state reporters have been covering it, which is, you know, why I haven't been on it. But looking at the media angle or anywhere else that they're advertising, I would think you'd give them, you know, the presumption of innocence. You know, you wouldn't blame somebody until Frosch makes his case in either,
right.
You know what I'm saying.
In court, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think the Sun takes advertising from these guys.
Yeah,
too.
My sense is it's allegations at this point, and certainly, you know, if allegations are made by the Attorney General, that's serious business, but I don't think you automatically deny the party that's the object of those allegations. You know, you shut them off where they can't either speak themselves about it or that they can't buy advertising in the media. I think that's not, you know, and some people might say, well, it's the media wants to make money. I really don't think, I'm not saying the media doesn't want to make money. Of course it does. But I think there, for me at least, there's a larger issue of as soon as somebody is the subject of allegations that you know, take their voice away. Because, you know, in a way, that's what happened in the 50s when, you know, a sitting senator, Joe McCarthy, charged them with stuff and people couldn't really get a voice. They were shut out of everything.
Right. I think you're exactly right about that. You have to wait for a resolution of the of this case brought by the AG and then the counterclaim of Everest Wealth Management. Dawn in Annapolis with a political question, which gets us into political news media. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dan. Hi, David.
Hi.
I wonder what David's take is on the media coverage of the Hillary Clinton email situation and her reaction to it. Diane Rehm had her first hour of today's show with respect to this story. And as of yesterday, Mrs. Clinton's reaction was to the media, number one, nobody's asking me about this except the media. And number two, this is all a vast right-wing conspiracy.
Well, you know, I do have strong feelings about, you know, I'm still upset about the rope line in New Hampshire when she roped the reporters away from her. Look, this is a serious matter just by nature of the FBI investigating it. That's very serious, okay? Secretary of State, very serious business. Her joke about Snapchat on Saturday in Iowa, totally inappropriate. I dare say, as smart as the Clintons think they are, utterly stupid. And it's offensive to me that a candidate for president of the United States treats documents that are entrusted to her in such a cavalier manner that she jokes about it, saying they disappear themselves. I prefer that. That's not a funny business. It's not even close to be funny. Is there political forces? Is there a political impetus driving this to the right? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that's a bad thing. I'm glad somebody's driving it. I want to find out. And look, the colossal error in judgment of using her private server. Other people have used private email.
Colin Powell, but not
a private server. Yes. And Clinton's spokespeople and she herself keep trying to confuse that thing, trying to say Colin Powell did this. He didn't do it. This is serious.
Politicians like to tell the media that you're the only ones asking these questions.
Yeah.
No one else is interested in this. You're making something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And I got that last week from the mayor of Baltimore.
Oh, you did? Oh, and the mayor. Oh, don't give me
some.
I'm taking down everybody today.
You don't have to do that. I just want to mention this. I was a little put off by this. I asked her why Kevin Davis is the interim police commissioner of Baltimore. Why isn't he just police commissioner? What interim to me means you're in between Anthony Batts and somebody else, and at a time when the city is trying to get this violent crime and robberies under control, this crime surge, you've got a guy in place. It doesn't exactly instill confidence if you're interim.
Yeah.
You said, well, nobody else cares about that. She actually said that to me. It's like, the public doesn't care about that. The public cares about safety in the streets. Well, of course,
astonishing.
Of course, it's true. It's true that the public. I care about it too. I'm a taxpayer in Baltimore City, but I just wonder why she.
You think
so? She used that, whatever that is, that tactic.
Yeah.
You know, you're the only one asking this question. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And she's so good with the media.
Here's a comment from a comment from Mickey about Caitlin. I am Kate. She says, I'm with Z on the superficial approach the Jenner show is taking, but any positive attention is better than what we've had.
Good point.
In the
good
future,
point.
Ms. Yeah. Jenner would do well to bring in trans people who have lived their lives without the advantage of $100 million and a TV contract.
Yep.
I watched the first episode and got irritated with the superficiality and bored with the scripted reality. I hope something good will come from this program, but I don't expect to see it on the Jenner show. I think her lesson will be all about glamour, and I'd hate that to be the only thing young trans kids are going to see.
Amen.
Listen,
amen.
A couple of things before the hour's up here. You really like the new David Simon show on series on HBO.
Yeah, there's a great story about it. Bill Zorzi, who was a reporter
yep.
over at there,
mm-hmm.
is really co-writer, co-executive producer with Simon. He worked literally 13 and a half years he's been on his project since he left The Sun. He's done other things, 3 years on The Wire. But it's a really good story. Zorzi really did some outstanding work on this. This is a very good piece of work. And I'm really kind of, I have to say, you know, in media, a lot of us, let's face it, we're all competitive and we're kind of, there's a lot of snarky people. And people don't like to see other people do well as often as we should. I'm really happy for Zorzi on this thing. I think he did an outstanding work on this, and I'm glad to see it.
Show Me a Hero.
Show Me a Hero, outstanding. Next to the 16th and the 20th, three nights, 16th, 23rd, and 30th. Next two Sundays, and it started this Sunday, 2 hours each night. By far the best miniseries, certainly, probably best miniseries movie or even series I've seen this year on TV.
In the time remaining,
yes,
Donald Trump,
he's
not going away. Your question is anybody on TV, I guess besides Megyn Kelly, going to take him on?
Yeah, you know, and Dan, I wrote about this Sunday. This is a very depressing turn. You know, he pounded back at Kelly and at Fox. They backed down. Fox backed down. She went silent, radio silent. And there was a message. Last week when I was trying to do this story, people didn't want to talk about it. People were ducking. I mean, literally. People did, to his credit, Chris Cuomo, the morning guy at CNN, who's a very passionate guy, Chris got up and talked about it. But NBC, big Scarborough, Joe Scarborough, big Joe and Mika, oh no, they sit there like blowhard, like gas bags on that show talking about how tough they are. They didn't want to take on Trump because they were afraid because Chuck Todd was going to have an interview with him. They didn't want to say something that would mess it up, blah, blah, blah. I saw Bill O'Reilly last night kissing up to him for my money. O'Reilly's now got this friendly thing with him going. Fox rolled over. You know, he only shows up now on the Fox shows that are going to be nice. The great Sean Hannity and Fox on Friends, which is, that was the Sarah Palin go-to forums, you know. They say nothing but nice stuff. They throw.
But
you
they're
know,
of a kindred.
Of course.
Spirits on all these issues, especially immigration on Fox.
But it was, but the lesson.
You know what Trump is saying today? The babies who are born of undocumented immigrants should not become citizens automatically.
Said that so last night on
the He's going run? After yeah. the babies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, God.
So anyway, I'm not surprised that Fox would do that.
You want to know what the tenor of that conversation was? After he says that kind of stuff, you know what O'Reilly says? Don, you know, I'm afraid you're going to deport me, you know, if you get elected president. Joking. Mm-hmm. And Trump goes, no, we love you, Billy. We're going to do everything we can to keep you right here. You know, that's the conversation.
But you don't expect that anything else from Fox, do you, when it comes to Trump?
I'm seeing MSNBC, NBC, everybody's playing nice with Trump. They're afraid.
He's good for ratings.
And they're afraid of him attacking them because of the enmity he caused for Megyn Kelly by going on Twitter and blasting her. That is a dangerous thing, that we are that scared. At least with Sarah Palin. You know, when I wrote bad
it's
stuff.
It's based on ratings.
If
coverage of him, coverage of Trump is good for ratings,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes,
so you
yes.
go for that and you end up making him the nominee?
Yeah, forget any kind of social. Yes, exactly, Dan. Forget any sense of social responsibility. Forget any sense of really vetting him.
Yeah.
You know where I'm starting to see it, though, in print? I have to say, you know, I'm not a biggest fan of David Corn, but he had a good piece in Mother Jones about the advisor that Trump said he's listening to on the Middle East, which is Bolton, Bolton, who was one of the go to Iraq guys, weapons of mass destruction. That's a really good piece. So we're starting to see it, Dan, but it's only in print.
Only in print.
Yeah.
David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Speaking of print, David writes for the Baltimore Sun. He's a TV critic there, my colleague from Calvin Street. Thank you for being here again, David.
Thank you, Dan. Zeon TV is the blog. Please go there. Help us out.
We'll see you next time you're here.
I'm going to be here.
All right.
Next time I'm here.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great afternoon.